Welcome to another episode of Global Data Pod Research Wrap. I'm your host, Nora Santivani, global economist at JP Morgan. And joining me today, I have two of my colleagues, Greg Fuseschi, chief economist for the euro area, and Alan Monks, chief economist for the UK. Hi, both of you. Thanks for joining.
Hi, Nora. Hi.
All right. So I guess the way I want to frame this discussion is, really, we're sitting here with a global backdrop of sticky inflation, resilient growth that has led to a significant pricing out of Fed rate cuts, right? Market is just looking for one cut from the Fed year and 100 basis points over the cycle. In other countries, you know, there's also been some scaling back generally of these easing cycles, but, you know, generally less than in the US. So if we look at Western Europe, then you know, central banks are still seen on track to ease policy around the middle of the year. In our own forecasts, we have the ECB cutting in June. We've got the Bank of England cutting next quarter. We've got the central banks as well cutting during this window. And, you know, these rate cut calls, in the way I view them, they've been supported by persistent growth weakness in Europe, right? With both euro area and the UK going through a kind of period of stagnation or even modest contractions. I suppose now, though, we're in a situation where European growth and global growth as well seem to be picking up. Inflation is still sticky. So the broader question that arises in my mind is whether Western European central banks can stick to their previously planned easing paths. So that's kind of the sensitivity I wanted to explore on this call. And I think if we sort of start with the growth outlook, that seems like an obvious place to begin the discussion. Both of you have had calls that we would see a growth recovery after that period of weakness in the second half of last year. And, you know, in some sense, that looks like it's starting to play out. An important part of that forecast was the European consumer coming back to life. A second part of the call was some recovery in the manufacturing sector. I think that's most important for Germany. So why don't we just start with both of you kind of talking through where we are in that growth recovery. And, you know, both of you have made some revisions to your growth outlook. So I don't know, Greg, if you want to sort of start us off, sort of just kicking the wheels on the recovery here.
Yeah. Finally, something is happening on our side. So the euro area PMI has been moving higher. In April, it reached a level that, you know, based on our simple translation to GDP terms, is consistent with growth at a 1.2% pace. The GDP data for Q1 actually ran ahead of the PMI. So, you know, it was about double the 0.5 that the PMI was signaling. So that's all finally some better news. I would say also the details on the GDP data that we have, and that's still quite limited. So we only have some details for a few countries. You know, they do show gains in consumption in general. They show gains in CapEx, trade. So it's a reasonably constructive increase so far. There probably is a bit of weather-related lift, especially German construction seems to have benefited from that in Q1, which is not necessarily something that will carry forward to the second quarter. But, you know, finally, some better news in terms of the growth numbers.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe just one more question to you before we let Alan elaborate on the same question is, you know, how much of a lift are we seeing here from the consumer, right? Because the view was very much premised on the consumer coming back to life. You're saying there's some initial signs of that happening. You know, is this just starting to gain momentum here? Or, you know, is it the case that maybe in the near term, there's some drags appearing? You know, we had talked about, you know, higher interest rates maybe starting to bite. So like, how sustainable is that recovery in consumption in your view? Is it broadly in line with, you know, what's in your forecast, or are you still feeling like it's a little bit tentative at this point?
Well, I think it's coming through. I mean, last year we had consumption that already gained, you know, something like a 0.5 per quarter pay, something in that ballpark. It didn't keep up necessarily with all of the real income gains. So, you know, you look at the saving rate and you can still quibble with the consumer, certainly. Germany had a delayed recovery in terms of real income. So that's been lagging the rest of the region, and it is a big part of the region. So that's that has been a drag. But the constellation of firm nominal wage growth combined with slower headline inflation is a pretty powerful argument across all countries. And as I said, in Germany, that's coming through with a delay just because of the timing of the various pay deals that have been struck, but it is coming as well. Now, tracking all of this through the retail sales and car registrations data, which are the most visible, together with consumer confidence, is, you know, quite hard work. But I would say the national accounts data have delivered better outcomes than you would necessarily have expected based on the limited monthly data that we have. So I think overall, it's that part of the forecast is definitely still on track and should really strengthen going forward. One factor that may have delayed things a little bit is that consumers' perception of inflation have come down much more slowly than actual inflation. So perhaps that's, you know, held back some of the recovery. But this real income constellation is going to be a feature for the coming quarters. And I still can't believe that you won't see firmer consumption numbers on the back of that at some point.
All right. So overall, it feels like you're sounding a bit more comfortable or reassured by the numbers. And, you know, in your growth forecast, you have essentially your area growth running, around 1%, right? It's been a little bit firmer in Q1. But that's broadly in line with trend growth, right? So that's broadly the narrative. So if we just shift to the UK, Alan, it looks like similarly there's some signs of recovery, that GDP is turning a corner here. If anything, it looks like your growth numbers for the first half are quite firm, maybe even a little bit above potential. So can you kind of talk us through what's driving that and how confident you are around this recovery being sustained?
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, the broad story, I think, is quite similar, seeing strength in real incomes and, you know, GDP was stagnating last year at best, so the savings rate was moving higher, and now you're getting this sense that maybe consumers are willing to kind of expand their spending a little bit more in line with their income. So that's quite sort of similar to the euro area story. But in terms of growth revisions, I did make larger changes than Greg did to the euro area forecast. I actually took up the GDP, UK GDP forecast by a full percentage point in terms of the level of GDP over the next year. So why is that the case? Why is it larger? I mean, one part of the story is that the near-term indicators have just been a bit firmer. So if you look at the PMI, for example, we're on 54. In the UK, I think euro area is 51, is it? Close to that. So there's quite a big gap there. And then, you know, you look at the housing market, that's showing signs of life. And that's usually, you know, quite a good indicator of sort of sentiment and confidence in the UK. Plus, we've had GDP numbers that have come in firmer. I've got 1.5% annualized gain for Q1 GDP on the basis of the hard data. So it just feels as though you've had a better start to the year in that sense. But the second element is that I was quite sort of downbeat on broader growth prospects for the year ahead, almost as a kind of necessary consequence of bringing inflation under control. Rates are higher in the UK, you know, something sort of breaks at some point, gets you stagnation or even recession. But that's looking less likely at the moment. This sort of story of global resilience also applies to the UK as well. It's just happening at a lower level of growth, but it's still resilient. You look at the labour market, for example. So part of my growth revisions were taking out this, you know, clear slowing in growth towards the end of the year and having something which is running a lot closer to the trends. That's why the revisions feel larger.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, another point we've made more broadly on the global team is that debt service burdens for households have been maybe picking up a lot less than we had anticipated. So they actually remain pretty moderate by historical standards. You know, we have seen obviously debt repayments go up as interest rates went up, but we've also had very strong increases in income. So in terms of debt service ratios, those haven't really picked up in a way that you know would be hurting growth in a meaningful way at this point. Greg, just coming back to you briefly on the manufacturing sector, that you know that still doesn't look great, right? So we've had the PMIs, there was improvement on the services side, and generally the PMIs improved, but manufacturing here remains a pretty sore point for the German economy in particular. What's the outlook there? You know, you've been making the point that actually it's not as weak as it looks.
I mean, it's not as weak as it looks in level terms, I think. You know, the most visible indicator is IP, and that is very weak. But when you look at the equivalent measure in the national accounts, it's much less pronounced, and it has recovered much more than IP. I mean, IP is still 10% below the pre-pandemic level, which is you know, not great, whereas the GVA equivalent is in line more or less with the pre-pandemic level. So you could see that there are some data issues at play. But when you look at the business surveys, even within the PMI, the services versus manufacturing split, especially Germany, there is still a momentum problem. So even if I discount the level issue on IP, there's still a momentum issue in the data, and that hasn't gone away, which is one of the reasons why we have been a bit cautious in marking up. I mean, as I said at the very beginning, the PMI is consistent with 1.2% annualized pace of GDP growth in April, and we only revised up to 1%. So that if you take that very, very strictly, you know, we actually need the PMI to come down a tick. But we're cautious at the moment just because of the sectoral composition, and also because at this time last year there was also a pickup in the PMI, which wasn't fully reflected at the level of GDP. So in a way, we're acknowledging the improved data, but without going, you know, running with it 100% at this stage. And manufacturing is a key part. I mean, I do think manufacturing will pick up. I think in Germany the, you know, order backlogs are still very high. I think, you know, in terms of energy intensive production, that still has scope to improve. Possibly there's been delays in the pass-through from wholesale gas and electricity prices to what companies actually feel. You know, so I still think that there's room for that to improve, but for now, we're still a bit on the cautious side until we see stronger signs.
So this brings us to the question now of whether these growth recoveries are in fact potentially creating stickier inflation, right? So let's talk a bit about inflation. I get the sense from your forecast, I'm just looking at both the Euro area and the UK core inflation forecast, that there's, you know, somewhat more confidence perhaps in the Euro area core inflation numbers getting down close to 2% over the next couple of quarters, where the UK, Ellen, you've got core inflation still stuck around this 3% mark. Maybe let's talk through why those differences and maybe link them to, you know, either the labor market, growth performance, slack. And then we can talk kind of more medium term about the likelihoods of kind of complete disinflation here across the two regions. What's needed to finish off the inflation job? We can also talk a bit about differences in productivity and labor supply, because I know those have been quite critical in explaining some of these differences. So why don't you two, both of you, give me like your 2-minute perspective on this question?
I'll start with the UK. I mean, the thing is, inflation in the UK, in an underlying sense, is starting from a higher level, really. So I think that's the first problem. Once you strip out the kind of goods and energy side of things, you know, underlying services inflation running close to 6% or so. So that's the first problem. Now, when I've taken up the growth forecast, I think there's a little bit of a debate about whether that adds to the inflation problem or not, because some people would say that it's ultimately reflecting an improvement in supply conditions because of the drop in, you know, energy goods, imported goods inflation. So in some sense, it shouldn't change the you know, the should be net neutral for inflation, if you like. So I sort of agree with that in the direct sense. I just think that if you're seeing stronger growth and it's filtering through to sort of business confidence, you know, pricing power, it can create a sort of broader impact, which does not necessarily get your re-acceleration inflation, but just makes inflation stickier and harder to bring down in line with the kind of pace that the Bank of England needs to see to be consistent with its inflation target.
And by extension, does that mean that the UK labour market has to weaken here to get inflation to come down further, closer to 2%? Is that basically that's implicit in your view, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's, I mean, there certainly, I think, needs to be some kind of shock that, now, if you're an optimist, you could say, well, you know, we could have a positive supply shock and that would do the job.
Yep.
So let's all hope that's the case. Maybe productivity does better. Could labor supply improve? I've given up hope on that side of things, I think, which is particularly an issue that, on the UK specifically. So it sort of leaves me with the conclusion that you do need to see a negative demand shock. And almost unfortunately for the Bank of England, they're not seeing a significant enough negative demand shock at the moment, even though growth is weak. And so it's been left with a, you know, still a very high rate of inflation. I mean, yes, you've seen some improvement in labour market conditions. There's been some evidence of a loosening there, but your sort of nominal indicators, whether it's services or wage growth, is still running a lot higher than you would expect based on those labour market indicators.
Greg, you and I have had some discussions around this, and the messaging I'm getting from you is you're a little bit more optimistic than the view that Alan has expressed here for the UK economy. You're more optimistic on euro area inflation getting down to 2%. And again, you know, it feels like you're not of the view that the labor market really, really has to weaken in a material way to get that disinflation. Can you just talk us through kind of what underscores your optimism?
I mean, I think the visibility on all of this is still pretty low, but I have been making a relatively simple argument in some sense, which is that we used to have 1% inflation in the euro area. So if you make the observation that things are going to be different post-pandemic and post-energy crisis, etc., compared to pre-pandemic, then I look at that and I think, okay, great. We do need things to be different. So I always look at the euro area inflation process as having a bit of headroom to accommodate permanent and lasting changes. Now, whether that's right or wrong, time will tell, but that's been the basic core on the inflation process. In terms of wage growth, which is still pretty elevated, we've also made the judgment that a significant part of the pickup in wage growth reflects a response to the high inflation rates. And now that headline inflation has already come down, you know, quite significantly, that will over time weaken the influence that that's having on wage growth and will lead to a moderation on that side. As I say, the visibility is low, but those are the kind of the key judgments that we've made that give us this anchoring point of 2% on the inflation process. So, you know, our forecast, as you observed at the very beginning, you know, has this optimism built in that core inflation will slow towards that kind of level. The incoming data are, you know, they are challenging. Services inflation still looks pretty perky. We have weakness on the supply side, which could partly be cyclical, but whatever it is, it's keeping the unit labor costs growth pretty elevated, and that may explain the momentum on the services side as well. So, you know, there are issues in terms of tracking this. We're getting some funny relief in terms of core goods inflation, which has taken a bit of a nosedive into April. But apart from that, the services momentum is still pretty firm. So there's the end point, there's the path, and the path looks tricky, a bit dark, you don't quite know where you're going, but we're hanging on to the end point idea.
And, you know, that brings us to the central bank reactions to all this. And Greg, of you, you've expressed is, you know, you've been a little bit surprised by the strong commitment that the ECB itself has expressed for cutting rates in June, especially with, you know, as you mentioned, unit labor cost growth still strong. And a lot of what you're outlining here, that optimism is very much, you know, prospective. It's a forecast. It's not really something we're seeing in the data just yet. But I guess also important is to talk a bit through where is growth and inflation tracking relative to what the central banks are forecasting, right? So I think what will be important also is whether they themselves get surprised by the data in coming months. So maybe let's talk through that for both the ECB and the Bank of England. And, you know, with that, I guess, what is the main challenge to the calls that you have right now, right? Which the ECB cutting in June and the Bank of England in August?
I mean, in terms of the ECB, they have a forecast that inflation also comes down to 2% by the second half of next year. The way their forecast works is they have actually a stronger pickup in growth than we have. So they reach a 1.5% pace, whereas we get to 1% for a while and then stay there. But alongside that, they have a very strong pickup in labor productivity, effectively assuming that the GDP growth that is going to be generated going forward is much less job intensive than what we've seen recently. So in terms of challenges on the growth side, I think it's the first half data are definitely surprising them on the upside. They actually had a pretty cautious forecast for Q1 and Q2, which they revised down in March, but then kept the strong momentum into the second half. The data are running a bit ahead, but I wouldn't say it's kind of night and day, so I don't think that's a big issue. The bigger issue is the mix in terms of how much jobs are being generated as part of that growth. I mean, they had 0% jobs growth in the first half, and there's no sign of that. I mean, employment growth is probably still running around 1% or higher at the moment, helped by weakness in hours worked, but nevertheless, in terms of, you know, bodies out there, there's strong demand for it. So it's keeping unemployment low, basically. So I think on the growth side, it's more the mix. On the inflation side, I think the challenge is a bit clearer. I mean, the incoming data, especially on core inflation, are higher. The ECB staff have got Q2 core inflation averaging 2.5%. We're not there. I mean, you know, we're kind of on a 2.7 level in terms of our forecast. April included a downward distortion due to the timing of Easter, and even that is higher than the 2Q average the ECB staff have. So I think that the challenge from the inflation perspective is very much there, especially on services. But for some reason, the ECB is just ignoring it. They seem absolutely set on ramming through a June cut. Even the hawks are on board with it. I don't fully understand it, but you know, subsequent debates are probably going to be more difficult than this consensus that for whatever reason they've managed to reach about June.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's also about the broad trajectory of inflation. Then you can argue maybe Q2 comes a bit higher, but I guess they're looking more on a broader trend basis. You know, it is, I suppose, coming down. How about for the Bank of England, Alan? It feels like, there's more of a challenge, right, in terms of the stickiness in inflation. What's your sense in terms of how the data might surprise the Bank of England in coming months, and like how does that skew risks around the rate cut call?
Yeah, I think the challenges are certainly greater. I mean, it's interesting that a couple of MPC members at the IMF spring meetings did actually describe the data as broadly tracking in line with their prior forecast. Obviously a very recent statement. And I did struggle with that a little bit, because I mean, what they said was, you know, implying that we're not necessarily going to cut soon, but we're still on track for lowering rates at some point later this year, let's say over the sort of late summer period. But when I look at the incoming data and how it's tracking relative to their forecast, I think it looks stronger and higher than what they're forecasting. So services inflation has come in a little bit higher. Private sector wage growth looks as though it's coming in on the high side of their expectations, not by an awful lot, but it's, you know, it's not surprising to the downside. And then you look at growth, and that's where I think the biggest gap potentially is, because their Bank of England had a forecast that GDP growth be running at 0.4% annualized during the first half of this year, and you know, I've got a forecast of 1.5% annualized over that same period. So I think there's a clear challenge on the growth side in particular. And then it goes back to what we were saying earlier. Does that pick up in growth get absorbed by better productivity, in which case it's not really an inflation issue, or does it start to generate fresh labor demand and a pick up in vacancies? So I suppose it's too early to answer that question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But kind of taking a step back, Alan, so yes, growth is picking up. You could say maybe Q1, Q2 a little bit above trend, but you know, this is coming after a period of you know, significantly subpar GDP performance, right? So I suppose, you know, they can kind of allow for that and still be a little bit underwhelmed by the broader you know, growth trends, right? Even as the current prospects are a little better, we are talking here of about persistent growth weakness for some time, right? So I suppose you said so yourself, we could be in a situation, and I suppose this holds a little bit for the ECB as well, where we get these first rate cuts delivered, but then in terms of the overall easing cycle, maybe it ends up being quite shallow, depending what the inflation numbers do. But there's a fair bit of pressure to deliver that first cut, right? Just in view of how subpar the growth performance has been for some time, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would sort of, and that's an argument that some of them have made, I would counter that by saying that during the subpar growth period that we've had, during the stagnation in GDP that we had last year, you're still seeing a very low unemployment rate, you're still seeing a tight labour market, and mm-hmm. inflation and wage pressures, which are way too high, which makes me think that, you know, the Bank of England and its forecast has almost been relying on a not quite a continued stagnation, but very limited growth upswing this year mm-hmm. in order to bring inflation down. And if it's now looking like growth is a trend or even above, then I think they could have a problem here. So maybe they still go ahead and cut. I mean, it does feel like they want to do that. But I could see, I mean, the biggest risk to the forecast, I think, would be that this growth pickup starts to generate labor demand, adds to the inflation pressures, and then they find out that they just can't cut as much as they had hoped for, you know, just recently. So that it shows up in a shallower sort of easing cycle as we look forward.
Yeah, and I suppose it comes back to this view of, you know, maybe weaker supply side performance, weaker potential growth than had been the case maybe prior to the pandemic. And then just a word on our more medium term rate outlook. You've got the ECB cutting to 2%, kind of broadly consistent with the long run kind of neutral nominal rate. Whereas for the Bank of England, you know, Alan, you've got them cutting to, is it 3.75? Which is still restrictive, right? So I guess, again, implicit in that view is that the UK disinflation process is incomplete at the end of this, and so that they need to stay somewhat restrictive. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, I mean, I think this, I did have 3%. I revised it up to 3.75 just recently, as you say. There's two reasons for that. The first is the point that you've just made, which is, you know, underlying inflation problem. There's a, you know, probably a cyclical swing in growth that I'm forecasting now. So they need to have policy that's restrictive to kind of counteract those pressures. But I would say there's another reason as well, which is that I do sort of buy into this argument that medium term R star is higher than where we think the long run might be. And therefore, there's a second reason why rates, you know, are higher, even at the end of next year, than you might think based on this kind of long run view of where equilibrium is. So I'm putting some weight on that argument as well.
Greg, I'll give you the last word. So your outlook, it seems consistent, right? You have a complete disinflation down to 2%, and you've got the ECB cutting to 2%. Is that roughly kind of consistent with that 0% R star, I guess? So how are you kind of thinking about your more medium term rate? No,
it's about as sophisticated as you've just laid out.
Okay.
A view about the underlying inflation process and that anchors where I think rates will get back to. And assumption about the neutral rate. How this plays out and, you know, errors around it obviously still large and the visibility is low, but that's the assumption. So
So basically the Bank of England view is more, you know, a little bit closer to the Fed call that we have, which is kind of an incomplete disinflation and rates ending still in kind of restrictive territory. All right, I think we're going to leave it there for today. Thank you to both of you for joining, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in to the Global Data Pod Research Wrap. We look forward to continuing the conversation on the next episode. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read the JP Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Co., all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on May 1st, 2024.